Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. Today we have with us Ray Haywood. He's a devoted husband to his wife, Natalie. They've been married for the past 30 years. Together, they intentionally raised two faith-filled sons, Nicholas and Frank, within the foundation of faith, the sacraments. Ray shares in more than 26 years of willful fatherhood and parenting experience. Now living in North Carolina, Ray and Natalie operate a small family-owned car dealership. They're faithful parishioners of St. Thomas Aquinas Catholic Church in Charlotte, North Carolina. And through active parish involvement, Ray's family's faith continues to grow in the New Covenant teachings of the Catholic Church. He's devoted to handing on faith-filled gifts to all men of good faith, wherever they may be in their faith journey. And today we'll be talking about one of the tools that he's published to help with that, his latest book, Tools to Ready the Journey, A Father's Guide to a Faith-Filled Family. Welcome to the show, Ray.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome. So to begin our time together today, if there's one thing you could tell people listening with us on the show that you want them to know about this book, what would that be?
Our journey should be of one spirit, and we should not find fault in any faith journey.
Okay.
I could elaborate on that.
Yeah,
what I feel is if you believe in Jesus Christ, then you're my brother or my sister. We should not find fault in faith. A faith journey is something that we work towards and in. And when we step further and deeper into our faith, things come closer to us and objective truth becomes clear. And you find objective truth through sharing in the sacraments.
Absolutely. So how do you see your book, Tools to Ready the Journey, being used? Is it geared toward individual, group study, both?
So I put a lot of time and effort into developing this book where it could actually reach into the hearts of young men. The targeted audience is young men between 18 and 25. But it's the intent of the older reader, the older man, who has already lived through the faithful journey, hopefully well, that can reach into that young man's heart and share with him the mistakes, the ups, the downs, all of the journey to make their road easier, especially in this world where there's so many stumbling blocks that are thrown before these young men.
Absolutely. You talk about it a bit in the book, but why are men's groups so important for us as men, and what advice can you give us for starting one?
So during the process of writing this book, I actually sat down with a publisher, and the publisher told me two things that I took away. One was that they appreciated that I'm bringing awareness and competence within the book that I'm sharing. But number two, which stuck with me, is that men's books don't sell. I was told that directly, and it's something that was taken away from me. And I thought to myself, wow, men's books don't sell. So now, how do we reach into a young man's heart? How do we do that? How do we make him become part of a community or a sense? And then this book begins and ends with, before we can lead, we must first follow.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much the beginning words, and the last chapter, it ends with it. So with following, with the awareness that we have to follow, hopefully we could jar these young men to understand that we don't really learn through men's groups, so we could go against the odds. We could actually step into a place outside of our comfort zone because we become aware that men's groups are something that we don't do. So let's try it. Let's see if we can reach in. Let's see if we can get the older man intentionally willing to hand this book to a younger man and say to him, look, this is worthwhile. This is going to show you parts of life's canvas that can only be seen through wisdom. It's going to prepare you for those challenging moments in life where if you don't have the foreseeable knowledge beforehand, you may live them where you're going to learn from your lessons rather than approach it well with some prior knowledge.
A lot there to focus on, and we'll throughout our time together today. But right out of the gate, your first paragraph, chapter one, you discuss how the role of a husband and father is not reflected clearly in the eyes of a young man coming into the role in society today. How did we end up here? Why is that so hard for young men to see?
Wow, this is, there's no small answer to this. I could go on with this for hours. This is extremely, here we go. When I'm 52 years old, when I was a young man, when I was a boy, my society reflected well of family values and moral posture. Young men coming into themselves today have no reflection of that. My parents had the opportunity of taking a fallback stance that their children would eventually get it. And we did, because we were filled with the sacraments of the Catholic Church. We celebrated them. We prepared for them. In that preparation and celebration within the family, we grew in our faith. It mattered in society. The community celebrated in it. When there was a communion, the church was filled. It wasn't just the people who were receiving the sacrament of the day. And the community around all of us at that time reflected well. Now, men reflect well within the four walls of their home. But what do their children see when they step out into society? Does that same reflection hold true? Or does that father who reflects well within the four walls of his house step out and then, you know, become part of this world, live in and of this world, which that statement is made many times within his book. I hope it becomes a topic at dinner when different conversations are brought up, that the father would actually intentionally say what we're discussing is something in and of this world. And these awarenesses that come into play will help the family to grow in faith and to understand that in good intent is not reflected. And good intent doesn't stop just within the family. It has to reflect into our society. Mm-hmm. And when we have a community of men that actually want to take their place and become intentional and good in their community, then we'll start to take steps towards taking our family back. Mm-hmm. And so this book has a study guide. And for the men who don't have the opportunity of sharing in a study guide, I put in place a chapter for each where they could go onto either a website that I have in place or the Facebook page. They could read the chapter and then go onto the specific chapter's page and look at what other people are writing about what they're sharing or even interact. And after they're done with the book and they step away from it, there's also in place a Instagram and a Snapchat so that they could stay intentional in their day-to-day life. So that they, because the only way that we're going to grow in faith in this society with all of these stumbling blocks is to have intention within our day-to-day life. They could easily just like the Instagram or the Snapchat, and during the course of the day, they could build within their daily chipping away at the sin and vice by viewing different things that other men of good faith are saying. And it'll keep them intentional.
Also accountable.
Well, yep.
So as men, I think to build on that question and that conversation is, as men, I think today we're extremely unprepared for our roles that we're asked to lead. And I can't tell you how many times I run a That Man Is You group, in a collective of parishes around here, and I keep hearing this from the 30-some-year-old father to the 82-year-old man, and that is, I wish they had this when I was younger and starting out. So how does your book fill that need?
It's all there. As I said earlier in this conversation, this book clearly paints the parts of life's canvas that only wisdom brings to light. You don't have to approach the life lesson unprepared. And this book is also one where an atheist could read this book and still learn. This book shares just awarenesses. All of us live the same. We all live in the same world. It doesn't matter if we're faith-filled or we're not. We're going to all have the same experiences. We all have the same challenges. And everybody will be able to learn from what's shared within the pages of this book.
And after reading it, I have to agree. We're going to take a quick break. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. Today with us we have Ray Haywood, the author of Tools to Ready the Journey, A Father's Guide to a Faith-Filled Family. And one thing I'd like to talk about here to lead off the second segment, Ray, is this idea of this community that you've built. Because, you know, we talked a little bit in the first segment about how men can get involved in a men's group or start a men's group. Sometimes that's just not available in their parishes. Sometimes it's hard to get other men involved in that, as we alluded to. But you have in the front of this book these Father's Guide connections of this community that's set up in various ways for people to interact. You have Instagram, Twitter, Facebook page, and the website itself. So what all... I'd like to encourage men to take the steps to get involved in those communities because of the interaction. So how can one go about doing that, and what exactly happens there? Again, I know we talked about it briefly in the first segment, but I'd like to highlight it a bit this segment.
So with the awareness that there's a challenge with men's books, I intentionally built a community where they could read the book and not have to be part of a men's group per se. And then they could visit each chapter individually and review and add comments to what other men are talking about back and forth, so that they could do they could have this experience privately and then just go on to the platform of their choice, or they could be part of a men's group and experience it within their community of faith-filled men. But after the book is complete, after they've gone through the journey and they come to the call of action about what is truth at the end, which is so important for them to actually accept into their will, we still have in place the Twitter and the Instagram, so that in their daily lives they could chip away at that sin and vice that's always surrounding them and throwing those stumbling blocks in front of them. And they could come into a community of faith-filled men. They could probably wind up having faith-filled men right in their own communities and build lifelong friendships out of just the interaction of, you know, becoming part of this community. And I believe in my heart that any young man who reads this book cannot step away from it without things being sown into his will. Mm-hmm. Any father, grandfather, mother, grandma... When a young man is coming into himself, he's 18, he's 21, he's getting married, he's becoming a priest. For this book to be handed to that young man is an important thing. This call to action, this book, this blessing, is not only for paternal fathers and young men, it's also for spiritual fathers. Because our priests need to come into the understanding of what the challenges are for our young men in our society today as well. So I encourage any priest, clergy, to start a men's group, because any priest or clergy who reads this book is going to see it's directed to them as well.
Mm-hmm. So to backtrack a little bit, what can we do to get these resources into the hands of young men, particularly when we're facing the fact that society is pushing back against us and intentionally trying to minimize the role of men?
Okay. We have a sleeping giant here in the Catholic Church. We have the Knights of Columbus. I've been a knight for longer than I am not a knight in my life. And I have two sons, as you mentioned in the beginning, in the opening dialogue. My son Frank is 20. My son Nicholas is 26. Both of them became knights at 18 years old. They were both squires before they became knights. There's a misconception with Catholic men, actually within anything we do in our life, that if we're not completely committed to it, then we just don't have time for it. I've been the Share Sunday coordinator within my church, and I do the food pantry for the last... I'm living in North Carolina for almost 11 years. It'll be July 11 years. For the last 10 years, I've been doing that food pantry, Share Sunday coordinator. I have the heart of a knight. All of the knights within my church, within my congregation, they know who I am. I don't go to the meetings. But the emails that come across when I see need within my community, what I can do, what my children and I can do, we do. That's the heart of a knight. We need to ignite within the Catholic Church the heart of the knight in every Catholic man. If you're a Catholic man, you belong being a knight. don't worry if you can make the meetings or not. This is not for the older men, for them to go and have something to do on a Sunday or a Tuesday night. This is for us to interact in our community, for us to reflect well, for us to instill in our children the virtues of charity and volunteering. These virtues are not, they're learned behaviors. Our children don't understand charity unless we don't show it to them. So I believe, I'm trying to work with the Knights on this, I believe that if the Knights would get involved within this blessing, we will easily reach into our communities. If we ignite the heart of a Knight, what the Knights stand for, in all of the Catholic men, we're going to easily take steps to take back our communities and build our faith-filled families.
Absolutely. To get into a little bit more what the meat of the book is, I want to cover a couple of topics you cover, and you have an excellent section in the second chapter where you discuss the correlation between free will and moral relativism. Can you give us an overview of that?
Absolutely. So chapter one, very important because it makes a young man find where his place is within his masculine journey. I think that many young men don't understand the different parts and aspects of the masculine journey. Now, chapter two feeds off the chapter one as well as the rest of the chapters. This book is written in succession. Don't jump around. Take it from beginning to end. Chapter two shares how I read a book once, C.S. Lewis, Screwtape Letters. Mm. It's a senior demon mentoring to his nephew how to take the will of a man. Mm-hmm. And in one of his letters to his that he's mentoring to his nephew, he shares that the will of a man is made up of three parts. The inner circle, the inner part is his heart. That's his will. That's his free will. The second circle is where he is rational. He rationalizes. And the third circle is where fantasy is. And what is shared is that in order to take the will of a man or to manipulate him into becoming in and of his world, just keep pushing all of these rational thoughts out into fantasy. Another perspective on this is the way that we give to charity. For some reason, we give to charity far away from us. There's people within our community that need our help, but yet we write out checks and we mail them. Why is this? This is a learned behavior. It's the same with our rationalism. We rationalize what is good to us, and we pull that into our will. But the world keeps throwing these stumbling blocks in front of us, chipping away and putting wedges between us by telling us, look around. The guy that lives next door lives a good life. He's not a bad person. Look at how he conducts himself. Everything is fine here. You know, so it just keeps getting pushed out into fantasy. And if we were to understand that we look at everything that's on the surface and we reason it within objective truth, we need to come to a lot of competencies. This book shares a lot of competencies that bring us to the awareness of how to discern objective truth. When we discern within objective truth, our will is able to accept much more into our heart. Virtuous. Hmm. Our will is no longer compromised.
For sure. You talk about a strong foundation in what you call true will. Can you explain this? And with society behaving the way it does all around us, how do we build this foundation in our lives?
So in the book, it's clearly stated, in my opinion, the foundation of faith is the sacraments. The sacraments that we share with our family, that we prepare for, all of the celebration within the community around us. When we celebrate and share in the sacraments, that is the way that we receive grace. And it also prepares a young family for the challenges that come ahead. When we celebrate within our young families the sacraments, we prepare them for when they push away from us in their teenage years. So, just human behavior, who we are as people. When we come into our teenage years, we push away from our families. We push away, if it's a boy especially, he pushes away from his father. He becomes defiant. This is just who we are as people. But when we share in the sacraments, and we hand on our faith-filled gifts to our children. We prepare them for their moments. Their moral compass and their family values will guide them unwittingly to them. They'll know how to approach life well. They'll make good decisions, even when poor decisions are presented to them, even while they're in their defiant stages. There's safety when you live in Scripture. And for many young fathers who have the foundation of faith built within them, meaning the sacraments, and they find no value in those sacraments today, it's going to be too late before they realize the loss of not building the foundation of faith within their family. You know, looking around at the world and saying it's okay for us to give up the old dead traditions of the church is not going to fare well as time goes on. But these are the awarenesses and the competencies that need to be brought to light within the young father, within the young man, so that he understands his choices have consequences. Mm-hmm. And it's not just his father that's explaining that to him, but it's also the community of men. And how do we get to that place? Mm-hmm. The Knights are the answer, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We're going to take one more quick break, and when we come back, we'll wrap up our discussion with Ray Haywood about his books, Tools to Ready the Journey. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, Catholic book blogger. We've been spending today with Ray Haywood. We've been talking about his books, Tools to Ready the Journey, an excellent book for men that I highly encourage everyone to get. So, Ray, one thing that popped out at me in this book and that has come up numerous times is we see these studies, you know, in TMIY, they talk about it all the time. They consistently show how the traditional family unit of a mother and father result in healthier children, ones with less emotional and behavioral issues, and yet society continues to attack the role of men as fathers. What in the world's going on, and how can we fix that?
Okay, so I would think that a simple answer to that, most of our answers in life are simple ones. We as people confuse it. I think the simple answer to that is routine. Our children need consistency. They need routine. They need to have consistency in their life. They're not supposed to go to bed at 8 o'clock and then midnight. And they're not supposed to eat at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and then 8 o'clock. They're supposed to have routine. That's what builds and fortifies within them. So the practices of the church, the manner in which we conduct ourselves when we live a faith-filled life is very reverent. It's very consistent. And that consistency builds within the will of the child a stability that can only be achieved through the stability that the parents reflect well. Very simple answer.
So, leading from that, I like the chapter you titled in the book, Owning Your Faith. Our faith is not something we dust off occasionally and stick it back on the shelf. We have to live it, don't we?
So, owning your own faith. There's a couple of times that is actually addressed within the book. Borrowing a rote faith is a chapter that these two chapters build off of each other. So rote meaning like the way that we would learn cat and dog when we're children, it's like by visual. So there's a lot of Catholics that have and own a rote faith where they're just following the example of their parents, and maybe those parents were rote in their faith as well. So to own your own faith, you actually have to accept Jesus Christ into your heart. You know, this is not something that's so a lot of people condemn the church and they say that they don't feel fulfilled when they're in mass. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is something that I have conversations with quite often now that I live in the South. Catholics are very rare where I live. I think me being placed here was part of my journey so that I could understand the view. And I feel as though owning your faith is something that's personal. It's not shared within only the confines of an hour in the church itself. Mm-hmm. It's something that's lived. There's an awareness that I just came into within the last couple of weeks. My pastor, Father Winslow, who I learned so much from, he shared what vital prayer is. And vital prayer is something that you actually live during periods of your time here in your journey. My vital prayer is that this book that I wrote actually does the will that it's supposed to. That's a constant prayer. It's a vital prayer within my own faith. So that's just one example of how I would understand owning your own faith. Mm. Know and be aware what rote means. Know and understand what a rote Catholic looks like. And with those awarenesses, you can come into understanding what it means to own your own faith. And don't ever let anybody condemn our church. It's enduring and everlasting because of Jesus Christ. Don't ever let it be determined by the events that are played out in the evening news.
Mm-hmm. And that actually leads right into my next question. You also cover the point that perception is everything. And with everything swirling around the church with the abuse scandal, how can we as Catholic laymen help to improve that perception that people are seeing, especially, as you note, when the media is really working against us?
That's another easy answer. Very simple. Have faith in man or have faith in God? My faith is in God. There's no man that could say anything that would take me away from my faith. My faith is owned and loved. And I feel so whole when I share in the faith that brings me to a peace of mind that can only be achieved by understanding that I'm sinful, and we could separate ourselves from sin, but not our sinful nature. You know, there's so many competencies and awarenesses that are shared within this book that makes the journey so much easier. Things that a lot of Catholics that I've had conversations with condemn the church for, but the church is not supposed to strengthen your faith. The church. My son, if you read, and I'm sure you read in the book, mm-hmm. My oldest son says, the church is great because she has all the answers, but challenging because you have to look for them. Mm-hmm. Because so many people feel as though they're supposed to get the answers when they go to Mass on Sunday. The Mass is not about us. It's about the sacrifice and the passion of Jesus Christ.
Yes.
It's a sacrifice. That's not supposed to be about us. But so many people condemn the church because they feel as though they're not fulfilled. If you understand the parts of the Mass, you become part of it yourself. And then you understand at the end of the Mass, when the priest says, go and take the good news out into a world, that's when you start to grow in your faith. When at the end of the Mass, the priest says, you know, the Mass is ended, go in peace, and you say, thanks be to God, in a manner in which you actually are thankful to God. Not just that the Mass is over.
Mm-hmm. So one of the biggest challenges we have in life as men is our obligations. Many of us are responsible for putting food on the family table, so to speak. How do we effectively go about the task of juggling life with our faith?
Okay. So the juggling life chapter, when I went to sit down and write that chapter, what I thought was going to turn up on the paper is totally different than what was written down. I can't even describe how it came into the primary bowls, all of it. It's all part of a blessing. So, the theory of juggling life. We have five primary bowls, okay? And of which we have five bowls, character bowls, of which two of them are primary, meaning faith and family. So the theory teaches us that we can only juggle three balls at a time. You would have to read the chapter in mm-hmm. order to bring in the fullness of it, but just simply, you have to constantly have the primary balls of faith and family in motion with one of the other balls so that you don't lose sight of what's important. If you take out of play juggling life, if you take faith out or if you take family out, you could find yourself falling within your humanity. But if you just take the awareness of understanding that juggling life always has to have the two primary goals of faith and family in the mix, then you're going to shield yourself from many of the worldly temptations.
You, as we alluded to in the beginning of our time together today, you open the book and you close the book with this quote, "Before we can lead, we must first follow," end quote. That takes humility. How can we gain that humility required to accomplish this?
This is another one of those topics that I could take hours to talk about, but I'm going to try to sum it up very, I hope I can be poignant with this. Our young men don't have anybody to follow anymore. Mm-hmm. They're going to actually have to come into the awareness that they're going to have to lead without following. Unfortunately, our society doesn't have any reflection of goodwill anywhere for them to follow by. Now, I'm not sharing that in the church, in the congregation, in their families. I'm talking about in the worldly, in the court of public opinion. There's nobody to follow. There's nobody worthwhile. It's so confusing. There's no simple answer out in society. And there's nobody worthy of following that's going to lead them to a life that's worthwhile, that's faith-filled. So for the young man who is filled with faith, who feels challenged, and he feels as though he doesn't have a place to take in society and in life because he's different than everybody else, because he doesn't fit in because of his faith, that's the man who should stand up and understand and say his prayer every day to St. Michael and put his chest out and understand that he has to put on the full armor and come into all of the awarenesses. So at each chapter of this book has artwork. And in the first chapter, you'll see it's the artwork is a tool that's specific to the chapter. And in the beginning, it's chapter, you'll see it's just on a cloth. By chapter 13, you'll see that that cloth is actually draped over the arms of our Lord, who's handing these tools on to you. So as the journey of the book is giving you more clarity, you're also seeing that the tools are actually being handed on by our Lord and Savior. I'm just the person who's lending the tools. We're all lent these tools.
Mm-hmm.
The author's page, I didn't put a picture. I put an empty toolbox because I lent my tools out. And that was the objective of this book, was to lend these tools that I've learned to make the path easier for these young men who are challenged way more than I ever was in my society when I was growing and taking my place, when I was coming into myself. Society was easier to find my way. As I said, my parents could rest easy on the fact that their children would eventually get it because society reflected well. For the young man who's struggling today because his faith finds him separated and outside of what's accepted, he needs this book. He needs to come into his faith. He needs to be strengthened by the community that we can build and chip away at the sin and vice in our daily lives.
Right, for sure. And that's a great place for us to stop today, Ray. I want to thank you for spending time with us. Where can people find your book, Tools to Ready the Journey, A Father's Guide to a Faith-Filled Family?
So pretty much everything is TRJ Father's Guide. So it's trjfathersguide.com is the website. There's a link to the book on the website. TRJ Father's Guide is the Twitter and the Instagram. TRJ Father's Guide is the Facebook. So I'm hoping that we could start to grow this community of faith-filled men. And I don't expect that I should have much interaction. I believe that it's been put in place so that they could interact within each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they could find within their own communities like-minded men so that they can actually hold each other accountable.
And that's good. Good group, good advice, good book. And that's all we have time for today. Ray, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule and spending it with us. Any closing thoughts?
Closing thoughts. I hope that any knight who's hearing this will go to his grand knight and propose that this book be a Christmas gift this year. They could reach out to me through the email. I will gladly send the books at just the printing and the shipping cost. There is no profit in this for me. I don't want any profit. And the more hands that we can get this book into, the better opportunity we have at taking back our faith-filled family.
Fantastic. With that, you've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, the Catholic book blogger. And until next time, God bless.